Oh, amigo.
Disordered Dags, Season 1, Episode 1, with your host, Jeremy, the guy with ADHD who's a daggy dresser and a bit of a cringe dad. And.
And Sandon, the 20-something with autism, who's so neurospicy, he'll tell you about every movie that's ever existed.
Oh, there we go. There's our we had no plan on what to talk about. We were just going to go by prompts or just what do you call it? Just go where the wind blows us. Movies sounds like a good place to start, though, with you, Sandon.
Yeah, I guess we could start with that. Yeah,
Top five
I've
movies of all
been
time.
okay. Yeah, just top five, or
I don't know.
'cause I've
Do
got
what you want.
yeah,
That's my
I've
offer.
got
Do what you want with
yeah, I've got a top 10 and kind of a tentative top 25, but
Jesus. I don't think we'll get through 25 in 1 hour.
Yeah, that we'll have to make it a very long podcast if we were doing that. But yeah,
All right, let's see
I'll
if we
start.
agree. Number one movie of all time, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, so that's my. Is that yours?
That's mine. I'm just seeing if we agree. I thought we did.
Yeah, that's my numero uno as well.
I mean, it's got everything in it everywhere all at once. So how could it not be? Like, it's got all the rest of everything in it. So it's got to be number one, yeah?
Yeah, it's with a title like that, you'd kind of expect it to be everyone's favorite movie, 'cause it's got like, yeah, just everything in it, everywhere and all at once.
It's a lot to live up to, though. Could have flopped big time.
Yeah, there is actually a movie out there called Nothing, and I've been wanting to see that for a long time, and I wonder if that would live up to the title.
Probably not. Hey, here we go. First tangent. What's his name? What's that book? The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. That book. Have you read it?
Yeah, I love that book.
Me too. But it didn't quite live up to. I thought it was going to teach me how not to give a fuck about anything. But instead, it's like, you have to give a fuck about the, one or two or three most important things, and not give a fuck about anything else. So I was hoping to learn how to not give a fuck about anything because that would be easier.
Yeah, interestingly, that I often rate that as my number one book that I've ever read.
Have you read Everything Is
But
Fucked?
yeah, I have read Everything Is Fucked, yeah.
I think that might be even better, especially it's very topical talking about AI, and I love his, even though the title is Everything Is Fucked, he actually has a very optimistic view of what AI might, how AI might make the world a better place.
Yeah, 'cause isn't the little tagline under the book, it's like Everything Is Fucked, a book about hope.
Oh, is it? Okay. I missed the subtitle.
It's in much smaller letters, but
I'm reading a book right now. I've told you about the Keith and the Girl podcast that I've been listening to for 19 years. Well, on there was a saga a couple of years ago where Keith Malley, the Keith of Keith and the Girl, catfished his dad for a year. So his dad sent his ex-wife, 2 years after they divorced, his dad sent his ex-wife an email that said, well, here, tell you what it said. It said, got the book sitting right in front of me. It said, Yeah. Forget about it. Anyway, Come on, I want to find it. What's the second best movie, or was there more you wanted to say on Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I could talk about other movies in my top 10 that I think are quite underrated.
I'll come back to this book
Oh, okay,
after we talk about movies, if I remember.
If you find it, we can get back to it.
I found it, but let's go back to the first topic for now. We could have done the Mike Kaplan, you know, what he did on his last album, where he started something and then finished it at the end of the album, and then started the second thing and finished that second last. But anyway, that was a lot more planned out. This is supposed to be a natural conversation.
Yeah, we'd be ripping off the movie Memento if we did that. So yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of it. I watched that the other day. Have you ever watched that in chronological order?
No, I'd how would you do
It's pretty
that? No,
fascinating.
I've been,
I didn't know you could. So it's an Easter egg on the DVD, apparently. There's some special way that you can go in and put in some Easter egg special code or something, and it'll play the movie in chronological order. But I don't have a DVD player, so I just torrented it in chronological order. And it's interesting. It really changes the tone so that you feel a lot less sorry for him, and you see him as a lot more of a psychopath when you watch it in chron, which means, because basically you're seeing the story through everyone else's point of view instead of through his own when it goes in chronological order. And yeah, he just comes out as much more of a psychopath and much less, you feel much less forgiving of him watching it in chronological order. It's crazy how much it changes just by changing the order of the scenes.
I could imagine how much that would just make him look a lot less sympathetic if you
Sympathetic, that's the word I
watched
was
it
looking
that
for,
way.
yeah. So check it
I'm
out.
almost
Maybe next time you need to watch a movie, check that out. You probably have
I
the
think
DVD.
I'm
You have a bunch of DVDs, don't you?
yeah I've got heaps. I think I might actually have the Blu-ray of Memento.
Yeah, look
And
it
yeah,
up. See if there's an Easter egg on the Blu-ray to watch it in chronological order. It's like a whole different
I'll
movie.
not. That would just like change the whole vibe of the movie.
Yeah. So, okay, what were you saying about obscure titles in your top 10?
So basically, my number 6, 7, and 8 favorite movies are like movies that most people wouldn't know from a bar of soap, except Fight Club, because that's about soap. But no,
That's not one of your 6, 7, or 8, is it? We
no,
all know
I'm
about Fight Club.
unfortunately, I didn't. We
Fight
shouldn't
Club
even be
was,
talking about it, but.
yeah, we shouldn't, but it was my favorite movie for 24 years. It took 24 years for another movie to beat it. What's that?
And
Yeah,
that
from
was Everything
1999
Everywhere.
until last year when Everything Everywhere All at Once came out. Fight Club was my favorite movie of all time. Okay, so 6, 7, and 8. Tell me about them.
So the 6 is Old Joy, 7 is Goodbye Solo, and 8 is Jeff Who Lives at Home. And
Is Goodbye Solo a sequel to Solo, a Star Wars movie?
yeah, but it no robots.
Okay, so tell me about these movies.
I think the one that I re well I like all of them for different reasons, but they're all just very like really comfort movies for me. They have I find them quite relaxing to watch, and Yeah, they just have really lovely like stories about characters sort of going through everyday struggles, and Old Joy is actually on YouTube for free, which is pretty cool. But yeah, that one's just really like, yeah, it's almost like an ASMR movie. It's just so relaxing and meditative. It's just about these two friends who catch up after not seeing each other for a long time, and then they go on this road trip together to this, out in this like rainforesty area in Oregon in the US. And actually Old Joy and Goodbye Solo have two locations in it that if I ever went back to the United States, I'd really want to check out those two places, because they just seem like such lovely like places in nature.
Cool.
Yeah, have you heard of B Bagby Hot Springs or Blowing Rock?
No, Blowing Rock sounds like an American Indian name.
Yeah, it does a little bit. It's actually called that because it's where it's like one of the only places in the world, or maybe the only place where the wind, because of how it's positioned, the wind actually blows upwards. So when you go to the edge of this blowing rock, you can throw a stick over the edge, and it actually flies back up into the air.
Say that again.
Oh, it's you can like the wind sort of goes upwards because of where the rock is. So yeah, you can
Right.
throw a stick over the edge, and it flies back up into the air.
Crazy. So this is in the movie. Which movie is this in?
Goodbye Solo.
Goodbye Solo. Do you know what that's streaming on?
Needle in a haystack.com. Like, yeah, I've got no idea. It's one of those movies. It's like
Might not
virtually,
be.
I actually, yeah, I actually found out there's like no physical copies of it in Australia. So,
Oh, jeez.
it's like a really like super indie, no one's heard of it kind of movie.
Trying to think if there's any. Oh, I don't think there's any movies like that in my top five. Definitely, probably in my top 10. A friend of mine made a super indie movie that I think the only people that I know who have heard of it are people that I've told about it.
Oh, okay. And
It's
that's
free.
in your top.
Yeah, it would be in my top 10. It's very relatable to me. So it's called Escaping Freedom. It's on YouTube. I don't remember if it's free or if you have to pay for it, but I think it might be free on YouTube, but might be wrong. Anyway, it's a friend of mine. It's called Escaping Freedom, and this friend and I were both in a fundamentalist church together in America. Let's see, I left 25 years ago. I'm not sure what exactly when he left, whether he left before or after me, but yeah, the movie's about what it's like to feel kind of trapped in that kind of place where you think you're happy, which that begs the question, if you think you're happy, then I guess you probably are. I don't know. But I definitely ended up a lot happier out of it than I was in it. I really like the title, Escaping Freedom. Like, obviously, if you have to escape it, it's not real freedom. But
Yeah, it's almost a
it's
bit of a oxymoron, escaping freedom.
yeah. So the main two characters are a pastor his main character and his sister, who's like a drug addict. So they both, he's got his addiction to the church and she's got her addiction to drugs, and neither one of them are actually happy. And he turns out to be gay, which is completely a sin according to the church that he is a part of, as well as the church that, the real church that my friend and I went to. And my friend, I don't remember if he's gay or bisexual, one of the two. But, yeah, trigger warning, there's suicidal stuff in it. I watched it with two friends together, one of whom never was a part of like that kind of church, and one who was. And the one who wasn't, that was never part of that kind of church, he was like, I didn't really like it. I thought the acting was all fake and whatever. And the other friend who had been a part of that kind of church and I were like, oh, I thought the acting was perfect. They were acting, yes, they were coming off fake. And that's exactly what it was like at the evangelical churches, like fake smiles and yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to totally denigrate it, because I definitely had real connections there as well. And some real happiness as well. But I guess there's something always underlying that. I don't know. I always was pretty sure that I would have told you I was 100% certain that I believed. There's always some niggling doubts. I'm listening to a podcast right now called, what's it called? I wonder how nuts it. So I love that our title is Disordered Dags, because I'm sure that any neurotypical people listening to this will get driven nuts by us never completing the topics that we start with.
Yeah.
Like top 10 movies. Yeah, feel free to interrupt me anytime and shift the subject too. I'm the one who's been doing that with my ADHD.
Yeah, I'll step in with my autism and just talk about trains for an hour.
Do you actually have an interest in trains, or are you just talking about the stereotype?
I guess a bit of both. I am actually kind of interested in like this. Yeah, like I've always kind of been interested in lists of things, and yeah, wow. Like even just like the stops from one, like on one train line, I've always found kind of interesting. Like, yeah, like to this day, I can still rattle off all the stations from on the Gympie North line in Brisbane, and just because I caught it so much. So, that's kind of one aspect of trains. But it's not really the trains themselves. It's more the train stations and all the different train lines and what stops are on them and things like that.
That makes me think of when I lived in, I moved away from Japan in 2005, so it's been 19 years, and I still have the train announcement when the train pulls into the station where I worked, stuck in my head. It's Osaka, Osaka desu, wasaremono no nai yo ni go chui kudasai, which means Osaka, this is Osaka, please be careful of things left behind.
Yeah, well, that's quite a spiritual thing. You could almost interpret that metaphorically as well as physically.
And that reminds me of when I took my daughter when she was 3 years old. The two of us went on a daddy-daughter trip, just the two of us, and because we had a newborn baby at home, and so I just wanted to give her, the three-year-old, some attention. She was used to being an only child, and all of a sudden she wasn't. So the two of us took a train trip together to Bundaberg. And when we were sitting at the train station waiting for the train, she goes, "Daddy, the whole world is a train station." Which I'm not sure what that means, but it was very philosophical.
Yeah, wow, that's... Yeah, that makes
sense. I'm not sure if you even meant anything by it.
Yeah, I was expecting you to say that she followed it up by saying, "Oh, the whole world's a train station and every stop is part of your soul," or something like that.
Right. Like Shakespeare's, "The whole world is a stage and all the people merely players." But she... yeah, I don't know. Have you read the Dr. Seuss book, the Places You'll Go?
Yeah, I have read that one. Yeah, that's a really good one.
I don't know if that inspired that statement, because in that movie, it says, sometimes I get stuck at the waiting place where everyone is waiting for a train to come or a bus to come or a plane to, or this or that, or, you know, whatever. I don't remember if she had heard that story yet or not.
Yeah, oh, that's a line in "Oh, the Places You'll Go"?
Yeah, it's like a full, like, couple of stanzas, really.
Whenever I think of that book, sometimes I think of this meme I saw once, and it was the cover of "Oh, the Places You'll Go," but instead of saying "Oh, the places you'll go," it just said, "Oh, the things you'll need to unlearn to become a halfway decent person."
Yeah, right.
And that meme's always stuck with me as being quite a interesting play on that. I think there might be a few other memes that change it, and it's like, the dietary requirements you might need, or thing, whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely 100% my favorite children's book. I think it might be my favorite book, full stop. It's just so inspiring, and just the space of a children's book, but it's a very inspiring diatribe for life. Here's that bit. It says, "You can get so confused that you'll start in to race down long wiggled roads that are breaknecking pace and grind on for miles across weirdest wild space, headed, I fear, toward a most useless place, the waiting place, for people just waiting for a train to go or a bus to come or a plane to go or the mail to come or the rain to go or the phone to ring or the snow to snow or the waiting around for a yes or no or waiting for their hair to grow. Everyone is just waiting for the fish to bite or waiting for the wind to fly a kite or waiting around for Friday night or waiting perhaps for their Uncle Jake or a pot to boil or a better break or a string of pearls or a pair of pants or a wig with curls or another chance. Everyone is just waiting."
Yeah. Wow, that was a great rendition. Yeah, a lot of those Dr. Seuss books are... I've actually literally got one right in front of me now. I realized I had one in my room, and I don't think it's got... Because it's one with a couple. I think it's got The Lorax. Another one that I love is...
Oh, I lost you for a second. Those Dr. Seuss books... hopefully the listeners heard you, but I lost you for a second. You said those Dr. Seuss books, and then I lost you.
Yeah, I was just saying that, I've always loved how inspiring Dr. Seuss books are, and I realized I've got one in my room, and I just pulled one out. Because it's like a 3-in-1 Dr. Seuss book, and another one is, did you ever read, did I ever tell you how lucky you are?
No.
Oh, that one's really inspiring too. That I feel like that one's just got great messages for young kids. And even as an adult, I find I love reading Dr. Seuss. It's just so...
Yeah.
It's
a lot of it's nonsense, but...
Yeah, I feel like it can even be more fun to read as a adult because the
Yeah.
wordplay and the rhyming is so sophisticated and
Yeah.
yeah,
Do you want to read a bit?
yeah, I could read a bit of did I ever tell
You
you how lucky?
inspire me.
Yeah. Settle down, listeners. This is children's story time of the podcast. Yeah, I'll try and find a really good passage. Okay, yeah, I'll start a bit from the beginning. When I was quite young and quite small for my size, I met an old man in the desert of Dries, and he sang me a song I will never forget. At least, well, I haven't forgotten it yet. He sat in a terribly prickly place, but he sang with a sunny, sweet smile on his face. When you think things are bad, when you feel sad, when you feel sour and blue, when you start to get mad, you should do what I do. Just tell yourself, ducky, you're really quite lucky. Some people are much more, oh, ever so much more, oh, muchly, much, much more unlucky than you. Be glad that you don't work on the Bungle-bung Bridge that they're building across Booba Bay at Bum Ridge. It's a troublesome world. All the people who are in it are troubled with troubles almost every minute. You ought to be thankful a whole lot for the places and people you're lucky you're not. Thank you very much. I'm here till Thursday.
You ever been to a poetry reading? A poetry, whatever? Poetry jam?
All at like slam poetry and
Yeah.
I think that yeah, I've been to a couple of like yeah, live slam poetries and yeah, some of them are pretty inspiring, especially when people get up and do the whole slam poetry and it's really like
Yeah.
yes, they tell us we are not here. Yes, we are. Yes, I am your son. And yes, you are, you know, and they're really inspiring about it.
Yeah, hey, movie buff. What poem does the axe murderer in So I'm Married, or no, what poem does Mike Myers read in So I Married an Axe Murderer?
Is it the man from Ironbark? Oh, hang on, I
I
just
think
gotta.
it's I think it's original, but I don't actually remember. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I was gonna say don't tell anyone that I haven't seen that, but yeah, I still haven't seen that movie,
Oh my
which
God.
is
It's
terrible
too
for
it was
my movie.
too Yeah, it's too non-obscure for you.
Yeah, I guess
I want to hear your whole top 10 list. If 6, 7, and 8 are those obscure ones, then that would mean the others are less obscure. Everything Everywhere All at Once. Everything Everywhere All at Once seems like the kind of film that would be a cult classic, very niche, but it won a, didn't like I think it won the most awards any movie's ever won in awards season, and that's by only counting awards that existed back when the previous winner had done it.
Yeah, I think it, yeah, because it won Best Picture and it won like
Yeah,
a
but I'm not
huge
talking about
amount of
just the
awards.
Oscars. So out of all the award shows, like the Oscars and the Golden Globes and the whatever all the award shows that existed back when whatever movie it beat had the record for the highest number of prizes won, awards won. Yeah, it got more than any movie ever has.
Yeah,
Which
and
is.
like you said, it's the kind of movie that doesn't feel like it would get that because it's
No.
got a quite an indie kind of It still feels quite epic and big, but yeah, it also feels like more of a
But I think
cult
it,
classic.
yeah, I think it was, even though I think they did a good job with their budget, but it was kind of an indie budget, wasn't it?
I think it did have a very small budget overall, yeah.
Although, can you really, I don't understand how, I don't think indie is the right word because A24 is a studio, it's just a smaller one. So in,
Yeah.
it's not really indie, it's just small studio.
Yeah, I think it had like five people working on the VFX team, and like yeah, so it had quite a small like crew overall, but and apparently I heard they actually started the day that they started the COVID lockdowns, like the first ever COVID lockdowns was the last day of filming for them. So they, yeah, that and they were able to like film and do everything they needed with, with masks on and all the safety rules. But yeah, it's pretty crazy that literally on the last day of filming is when the COVID lockdown happened.
Oh, the last day of filming. I thought you
Yeah,
said the
yeah.
first day of filming. Well, that's good that
Oh
they were
no,
nearly
the
finished.
last one. Yeah, that's
Heard.
like really good luck.
Is Doctor Strange a multiverse movie?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, because the
I think
second
that.
one was called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah. And I think that came out, it came out before Everything Everywhere All at Once, and they were like, oh man, that's what we're doing. But it's I
Yeah.
never saw that Doctor Strange one.
Yeah, I saw the first Doctor Strange, I think,
Me too.
but yeah, the sequel in the Multiverse of Madness came out like a few months after Everything Everywhere, I think, and
Oh, it
everyone
came
was
out
saying,
after
oh,
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
yeah, I think it came
Maybe
out
that maybe
after as well.
Spider-Man's what they were bemoaning. Anyway, it became like when they started making the movie, I don't think there were there were any popular multiverse movies, and then by the time it came out, like it was a little bit overdone.
Yeah, it's quite lucky that it stayed popular given that there were so many other like even bigger movies that had the whole multiverse thing.
Yeah, but I think they did it best.
Yeah, I feel like and that's what I think most people said is that yeah, Everything Everywhere did the best interpretation of the multiverse.
Yeah. I think Spider-Man was cool. Like, it was a cool way to explain. Did you see, what was that? No Way Home? Is that Spider-Man? The
I
one
think
that
it
had
was
all
the
the different
animated
Spider-Mans in it?
one.
Oh
Yeah, that
no.
was
The live action
the
one. The
in
live action one that had like Tobey Maguire and like it had three different people who have played Spider-Man in major roles, all playing their own version of Spider-Man.
Yeah, was that I think that was the Marvel one, wasn't it? With Tom Holland
Yeah.
playing Spider-Man?
Tom Holland,
Yeah.
yeah. Tom Holland and Jerry, I'm not Jerry Maguire. I'm Tobey Maguire, and I remember who the third one was. But that was cool,
Andrew
you know,
Garfield.
because there was that whole thing with Sony and Marvel and who owned Spider-Man and whatever. So they kept making independent movies. So that was a cool explanation on why it was different actors playing Spider-Man.
Andrew Garfield was the other one who played Spider-Man.
Right.
But then there was the animated Spider-Man movie, Into the Spider-Verse and Across the
That's
Spider-Verse
part
was
one,
the
right?
sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
So I've seen the first one, and but I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't paying that much attention. It was on, the kids had it on, and I came in and out of attention. It did seem cool what I saw of it, but I haven't seen the second one, and the second one I've heard people raving about, like people people who don't necessarily like many movies because they you're interesting. You've seen every movie, not every movie, but you've seen so many movies and you still enjoy them. Like usually critics and people that watch all the movies, they start not liking very many movies.
Yeah, I think I can find sort of enjoyment in pretty much any movie, like even if it's a new big Hollywood movie or a little indie movie, I can seem to like find at least something in it that I enjoy. And yeah, I think it's good I don't get too sort of jaded like a lot of movie critics get.
I think I've kind of got that a little bit that way with TV, maybe even movies, but it's not that I don't like them. I just, TV especially, I have trouble getting into them anymore, TV shows. I don't know if it's social media's fault that I'm used to watching, 1 to 3 minute videos. I just don't feel like sitting down for, but I don't know. Like I still watch. I just binge. I finished Friends while I've been in hospital. I started a couple months ago and I watched all 10 seasons. That was interesting. That was my favorite show when it was on, and I never noticed the first time around that it's just full of gay jokes. Like almost every episode has.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
did that detract from your enjoyment of it, or?
Not too much, but they weren't vicious. Like in some ways I felt like, I don't know. I felt like they were trying to be a little bit progressive and like, show gay relationships, but they were like background players and it was, the fact that raw, have you watched the series?
Only like little bits and pieces of it, but not really enough
Right.
to really get a clear view
So
on it.
Ross's first wife left him in the very first episode because she fell in love with another woman. So it's kind of like they show their relationship, but and everyone's okay with it except that it ruined Ross's marriage. And so yeah, I don't know. That's the only main gay relationship. And then they talk about gay relationships as if they're okay, except they're always making jokes about each other being gay and whatever, which is definitely, I don't know, it's still probably normal. It was definitely normal back then. But I didn't find the jokes to be like vicious or mean spirited or anything. It was more just a matter of how many there were and how there were several in every episode, and it just is a bit hack. Like it was even if it wasn't, I think they were like overdoing gay jokes overall. Everyone was overdoing them back in those days. But even if it wasn't everybody else, they just overdo them in their own show. But that's again, originally you would watch one episode each Thursday for 20 weeks out of the year with a few reruns stuck in between. So you wouldn't necessarily notice that it was all the time until you're binging it. TV wasn't made for binging back then.
Yeah, I guess that's a big difference now because you can binge TV shows. You can really pick up on a lot more than when you just watched it week to week. Yeah, you wouldn't. I guess you'd see some patterns and things that would often come up, but they wouldn't. Yeah, you probably wouldn't be constantly saying like, "Oh, why are there so many of these types of jokes in the show?" I mean, you might, but yeah, it would be a lot harder to detect that when you had to watch it week to week.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I think it said
Hello.
your microphone now.
Yeah, sorry. I was sharing on TikTok that we're live. We're recording our first episode live. But yeah, going out of the app. cut my microphone. I'll admit that's what happened the first time as well. So sorry about that. I won't multitask anymore. So what were you saying?
Yeah, and I was just saying that back when you had to watch shows week to week, it might have been a bit harder to pick up on like a consistent theme in the show. Whereas now, like, because you can binge shows, it's easier to say, oh, why are there so many of these types of jokes or whatever
So
happening over and over?
comedy, like repetition can be annoying in anything, but in comedy especially, like I don't know, jokes get old. Although one of my favorite my favorite late night talk show host ever is David Letterman. And what I love about his style of comedy is that he beats a joke like a dead horse until it's not funny anymore, and then he keeps beating it until it's funny again.
Yeah, that's a that'd be a hard type of humor to make funny.
Because like on TikTok, I've been doing the whole thing where I do dad jokes, and I basically just have one joke with it, which is that I explain the joke with dad jokes for me is that I then explain the dad joke as if the audience isn't laughing because they don't understand it, instead of that they're not laughing because it's a stupid joke. But if I were to do that, like I do that, every 3 hours or so, I'll post a joke with that same joke. But if I were to do like 5 or 10 minutes of that on stage, I don't know if, yeah, it would get, I think it would do that. If I kept doing it, it would get old and people would stop laughing. And then the fact that I kept doing it even after it wasn't funny anymore would make it funny again. But it's really hard to sit in that awkwardness. Like, I think. I really like The Office, particularly the British version. And actually that makes sense with my name on TikTok is Cringe Dad, and that's the whole premise of The Office, is it's just cringe humor. In fact, when I used to binge The Office, I couldn't watch more than one episode at a time, maybe two at most, but it gets so cringy that you just after a while you're like, I still find it funny, but after a while I don't know, you get sick of cringing, I guess. Did you watch the British The Office?
I've seen all of the British one. And yeah, I do, as much as I do love that type of British humor, sometimes it can, and I found that with The Office, like sometimes it got so cringy and awkward to the point where it was almost like a bit depressing, like
Yeah,
but
maybe
you were
that's
just
the word,
watching.
depressing. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I think probably this would be a typical neurodiverse thing, is like, I saw myself in him, the awkwardness and whatever. So it's like, oh shit, I'd say something like that. And then I sit there in that awkwardness. And so, like, yeah, I could feel it as if I was in it myself.
I think I felt that too, and sometimes you were just seeing Ricky Gervais just get into so many just awkward situations to the point where, yeah, it was almost like a just a bit depressing to see like that many like soul-crushingly awkward situations, and it feels so much more real, I think, in when like British comedy shows do it compared to
Well, what
American ones,
about
I think.
well, what about Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, that
That's very similar.
I Yeah, I really need to watch more of Curb Your Enthusiasm, but from the
Me
what
too.
clips of it I've seen, yeah, that show does it really well too.
And he's playing, like, I think Ricky Gervais is actually, I think his cringe comedy characters, I get the feeling that they're sort of based on himself, but like turned way up. But Larry David, the character actually has the same name, and like it's probably turned a little bit up, but I think it's pretty accurate to what his everyday life is really like. Not even turned, I would say not even turned up, just all the awkward scenes are put together in an episode that might normally in real life take place over 3 or 4 days, but it all takes place in half an hour on the show. So it's only amplified by putting all the events right next to each other. But I feel like the events are pretty similar to things that would have happened in his real everyday life.
Yeah, I
And
feel like it.
you know
Yeah,
that
you go.
George in Seinfeld was based on Larry David?
Oh no, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Cuz I know the basis of Curb was that Larry David wanted to be more of part of Seinfeld than he was, so it was kind of his opportunity to like make his own kind of show that he wasn't able to sort of contribute to on Seinfeld as much as he wanted, or something like that.
Yeah, interesting. I wonder if he wanted to play George. I would have thought that if he did, they would have let him, but I got the feeling he didn't want to act back then. I don't know. I'd be
Yeah.
interested to find out. I love his story. His story is inspiring to me because I feel like I know of a few people who find me hilarious, and I think most people don't get my sense of humor at all, and so they don't really find me funny. But Larry David apparently was kind of like that. His stand-up, from what I've heard, this might be an exaggeration, but I've heard his stand-up bombed all the time. But Jerry Seinfeld was always in the back just cracking up. Jerry Seinfeld found him hilarious, even though most of the audience didn't really get him. And that's all it took. When Jerry was offered his own sitcom, he said, "Sure, but only if my friend Larry can come write and produce or whatever, direct with me, whatever it was." So yeah, I just have to find one person who gets a good chance that finds me hilarious.
Yeah, and maybe because did Larry Del David help write a lot of the Seinfeld episodes? Because maybe
Yeah,
that was his.
I think Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld were the head writers of the show. The two of them worked
Oh,
together to
okay.
write it, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, and I think I heard as well that the reason the show was called Curb Your Enthusiasm was because there was quite a lot of hype before it came out that it was going to be like, yeah, like the Larry David's opportunity to make his own Seinfeld or have his own passion project. But because he's quite like self-deprecating and that very like sort of Jewish New Yorker kind of self-deprecating humor, he called it Curb Your Enthusiasm because he wanted to say to people like, oh, like you're really excited and enthusiastic about it, like, but I'm gonna curb that a bit and, you know, don't get too excited.
Yeah. Don't get your expectations too high. You
Yeah,
can't handle
yeah.
that kind of stress. Yeah,
Yeah.
we should maybe that could be an assignment. I've watched, I don't know how, I've watched like one or two, maybe three seasons, and I think there's at least 10. So there's heaps of it I haven't watched. Although I tuned in to an episode of the final series, I believe they're in the final series right now. Anyway, and it's gonna go off on a tangent, but I decided not to. I saw on an airplane an episode of the final series, and I was like, oh, nothing's really changed. It's the same old Larry 10 years later. So,
Yeah.
but mean, I don't know. Yes, it's similar to Seinfeld in that it's not really story based. It's much more character based, and since the characters don't change, the jokes are not necessarily that much different. But anyway, we could maybe between episodes, both of us should start binging. Well, I'm going to anyway. It's up to you. Because I've finished Friends, and I've almost finished. After I finished Friends, I started on American Crime Story. The first series of that is the O.J. Simpson, the People versus O.J. Simpson, and
Oh, yeah.
Robert Kardashian. I haven't watched it. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't seen that one, no.
So I've been watching it while I've been in hospital, and because I don't remember really seeing David Schwimmer in anything besides Friends, and he's very goofy, like pratfally or not, yeah, very what do you call it? What's the slapstick? He's very goofy and slapstick, and I've been told like he is an amazing actor, and he does great drama as well, which is so he plays Robert Kardashian, who was one of OJ's lawyers in American Crime Story. So I'm watching that. I don't know how many more episodes of that I have, but I might. Anyway, I'm going to start watching. My next thing will be Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, I've really got to get onto Curb. A good friend of mine often he's told me about how much he loves Curb and how he's shown me like a few clips of it on YouTube. And yeah, the type of humor is just exactly my type of humor, just that like witty banter and that back and forth between characters and just a situation goes from 0 to 60 because they just go down all these rabbit holes of where the conversation could go. And I've always loved that kind of witty banter when it's done really well.
I took what's his name? Ha. I'm on a medicine called pregabalin, which is a nerve pain medicine, and it has the side effect of forgetting everyday ordinary words. I'm not forgetting a word
Oh,
right now.
okay.
I'm forgetting a name. I wish I could. Tim Ferguson. I took Tim Ferguson's writing class. Do you know Tim Ferguson?
I don't think so. No, is he local or?
No, he was in a huge comedy band in the 90s. So you're a bit young. Most Australians that are like my age or older know of what was the band called? You probably heard of the band. Let me just ask. I'll do that. 1 second, I'm asking my magic rectangle. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
What band was Tim Ferguson? That's where we need some live listeners to chime in with information. Doug Anthony All Stars.
Oh,
You know
my
that?
dad's talking about Doug Anthony All Stars, and
Yeah. See, I told you. Old people know about him. Anyway, he's in a wheelchair from MS. But so I think the band active until 2017, it says. And they're from Canberra. Initially they were together between 1984 and 1994, and then I think they might have broken up because of his illness, I'm not sure. And then they got back together for a little while. Tim Ferguson on main vocals. Anyway, so he taught a comedy writing class in Brisbane a few years back. Well, I think he's done it a few times, but I went a few years back, and he talked about how Seinfeld does this thing where they either take trivial things really seriously, or they take really serious things really trivially. And there's actually one example he gave was George invents, oh, what was it? Oh, it doesn't matter. Forget about it. But my point is, that's what I do notice in Curb Your Enthusiasm is a lot of taking trivial things very seriously. That's the more often thing. But like, one of the scenes I always remember is he is heading into the doctor's office, and this doctor doesn't go by appointment time. They go by first come, first serve. So anyway, there's a lady running to the lift, so he holds the lift open to let her in. And then when they get to the floor where the doctor is, she rushes ahead of him and gets ahead of him. So she gets to be seen by the doctor first. And this, of course, ruins his whole week.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Well, you've probably heard that the dialogue in that show is completely improvised.
Yeah, I think, doesn't Larry David, he'll have like an outline of like a basic premise he wants for the scene, but then he'll just say, just like say whatever in the scene.
Yeah, so I think like that scene that I just talked about, he would have said, okay, what we're going to do is we're both going into the doctor's office. The lift is going to be closing, but I'm going to hold it open for you. And then you're going to rush ahead of me and get to the doctor and get to see the doctor first. And then that's it. And then they just do it. I think it's really cool. Well, of course, you and I, we haven't told the listeners yet, are an improv duo. And we've both been part of Big Fork Theater and Improv Mafia, now Improv Queensland. So I love it. Just, you know, it's just cool knowing about improv being in a mainstream show, but also I think it's cool that the actors are doing their own writing of the lines, and they're doing it within the scene, which to me makes it feel like much more real and natural than whatever writers would have made up for them to say. Each character has their own writer, and it's the character, the actor that's playing the character, and it's done actually within the scene. I think that all makes for a much more real approach.
Yeah, that would I feel like that would make it a lot more just natural, knowing that all the actors were saying things on the fly and weren't having,
and they're in character. Like, as a writer, especially a writer who's not an actor, but like as a writer, it's got to be much harder to get in character. And then it's like, as a character, being in character and in the actual scene when you're coming up with the lines just feels like the right way to do it. Of course, they don't just take one take. They'll go, okay, that was good, but let's say it this way this time, or let's do this or whatever, but still.
Yeah, no, it's still like really impressive when they can, just have that, just the basic outline of the scene, and then have that witty banter improvised. And because I have even heard some criticism when I've watched some people review movies on YouTube where they say like, oh, this is just another comedy that's come out where they just put the camera in front of some SNL stars and just told them to riff off each other and banter, and that after a while we've had so many comedies like that, you know, just seeing a more scripted comedy that's more rehearsed and like it is sometimes better than just seeing, because sometimes like every now and then it is good to see something a bit more scripted because they can
refine,
put a bit more effort into it. But
I do that. See, I like that it's improvised, but that they also don't just do one take. Like they go back and refine it.
Because they can still have that opportunity to refine it and yeah, like tweak certain lines that can adhere a bit more to what the writers want out of the scene and things like that.
Yep. All right. Well, that's an hour, and my lunch has just come. So I think that's a good place to end episode one. And then we'll come back for episode two sometime soon, where we'll talk about something completely different. And it might be just as good, a little bit worse, or a little bit better, because it'll be an
Yeah,
improvised conversation.
those are the three options, or four, all of the above. It'll be all of those things in one conversation.
It might be all about movies again. It might be nothing about movies. Who the hell knows? Really, who the hell knows if anyone's going to listen? It's just Sandon and I, you and I should just forget the audience. It's just you and I having conversations, and they happen to be recorded. And if other people want to spy on us in our conversations, whatever, that's fine. Maybe we'll be
Yeah,
Adam
you can
Curry.
turn
Who kind of
it on.
invented podcasting said that with podcasting, everyone will be famous to 15 people. Maybe that'll happen. Maybe we'll get all the way up to being famous to 15 people.
Yeah, and then we'll have a whole village of listeners, and we'll be happy.
Yes. All right. Well, thanks, Sandon. We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah, thanks for the maiden voyage episode, and yeah, we'll see where it
The
takes us in
pilot.
the
Let's see if
future.
we get picked up.
Yeah, the pilot. Yeah.
Bye.
Okay, bye.